Lovely to be back here and to have had your frown with us. Total blessing. We've had a lot of silliness and a lot of profundity already, and hopefully that will continue. So just a few practical things before we start. I wanted to just explain that many of you might know that the residential people here who are staying, and also people who are just coming on a daily basis, so they'll be joining us from around 9:30 every day until as late as they can. So the program ends about 9:30 at night, if Ajahn Brahm stays for the time. You never know. You may either fall asleep early or carry on. So they'll be coming and going, and we'd like to request that people who are coming from the outside just are aware that when people stay in a place, the silence tends to deepen over time. So just to be sensitive to that and try and tune into it and protect the silence of the place. So it's already a very nice energy here, but we want to build it, and so when people come in from the outside, they can quickly settle down as well. The people who are non-residential will be bringing their own packed lunches. So there's a separate dining room for you, and I don't know, has anybody shown you where that is yet? Aha. So where's Sue? So Sue's over here.
They seem to assume you'll be having it.
Food? No, we usually use the dining room downstairs.
Do you want to go and check?
Yes. So normally there's a separate dining hall downstairs, which is a big, like a function room. It's kind of on this side, I think. You'll find your way, don't worry. And the residentials have their lunch at 12:30 in a different dining room. So all will become clear, and the tea, coffee, biscuits are coming around 3 times a day, so just help yourself, that's for everybody. I think the residentials have tea in the room as well, so we always think that tea juice is the best course for good meditation, so make sure you get plenty. So is there anything else? Familiarise yourself with the fire exits, there's two here, and around the building. So we haven't got anybody to explain that in particular, but there'll be little pictures in and there about the fire exit. Anything else? Are there any practical questions that anybody has? You just want to meditate, huh? That's great. Okay. So, yeah, because you don't know the dining room, just have a look out for it at lunchtime. And it'll be quite obvious, so either you can contact Sue, who's the designated retreat manager, or you can contact the staff on the front desk and they'll be able to help. Yeah? Great. So, let's go.
Silence.
Oh, silence. We did say about silence, that we're trying to build up the energy here. So silence is the best way into stillness. You know, it's very difficult to get the mind still if you keep disturbing it with speech. And you'll notice when you go into silence, you have so much speech going on anywhere, you don't really want to like add to that. So do try and respect the silence. It's really important as a container for practice. So and that's especially for people who are non-residential, because when you go out, you're speaking. So even when you go out and meet your families, you know, try and keep the speech just to the minimum and remain centered, you know, remain in the retreat energy as much as you can. And this will help the continuity. Because it's very rare that we get this sort of level and quality of teaching. So, yeah, it's a very special retreat. Thank you for coming. Good.
Am I supposed to keep silence?
difficult ask.
So, what about the sign language?
I am. You tell about sign language.
No, no.
Okay. The sign language that I learned in Perth. Is the one finger sign.
If
anyone starts speaking to you, please use one finger, but not a rude one. Okay? Just, and you can smile when you do it. Just smile and just. And it's a little reminder for that person as well. Yeah? Anything that they might need to ask, they can also ask downstairs. So, you know, you don't really need to disturb each other's bubbles. So you can just disappear into your own space. And feel safe here, hopefully. Yeah? Good. And also during the retreat time, just to leave the questions until the evening. So if you have questions for Ajahn Brahm, or not for me, because I'm on retreat, honestly. So actually, where's the question and answers box? Does anybody know? Okay, hopefully a question and answer box will appear, and you can write things down on there, and you can be as creative as you want because it's all anonymous. So, go for it. Don't shy. Yeah? So that also helps to protect the atmosphere. Ah, there she is. Sue, do we have a question and answer box?
I do.
Awesome. Oh, it's only a little. So write small questions. And do you have paper and stuff like that?
I've got paper with
it. Okay, so
where would you like it? Outside?
I think if it could be... Is this a good place for people or is that too busy? Because we're having tea and stuff here.
Yeah, and then they could... Well,
should
you write them somewhere else and then just drop them in the
folder. Yeah, you can write it anywhere, but just put it in the box before... before 7 o'clock, actually. Before the meditation and then the session.
In answer to your other query,
yes, about the dining room.
They have altered the dining rooms round a bit by the sound of it. She's going for that meal joke and
okay.
Checking it.
So, follow Sue for the food. Or Jake. Where's Jake?
Jake's still down there.
Okay, Jake is the young man, quite tall, dark hair. Anyway, it'll be follow the leader. I better shut up now because it's actually the clock is wrong. It's 9:45.
Really?
Yeah.
Only another half an hour to lunch.
No. Oh, yeah, me and Ajahn will be going for lunch. I have to admit, Ajahn Brown's been teaching me how to let go, so there's all kinds of details I haven't thought about this retreat. So, because we go for lunch at 11:30, and you all will be here till 12:30, so normally somebody rings a bell. But I've totally forgotten that. So maybe you can have kind of... We do ask that you don't have... or mobile phones in here. So is anybody willing to maybe announce that it's lunchtime?
There's a bell in the lift, I think.
Fully stopped in the lift.
I think people will know when it's lunchtime.
Yeah, otherwise you just have a little clock and you peek at it.
So welcome to this retreat, the first morning. Always keep it nice and free and easy, just a little bit of a talk, some meditation, get used to your rooms, but please also remember you don't always have to meditate here. You can find many places in this compound, very beautiful places of peace and tranquility where you can meditate, and please also those who are traditional Buddhists, to know the Buddha was never enlightened sitting in a hall. He was meditating under a tree and got fully enlightened. There's no trees out here. So if you can find one, you want just to, especially in a day like today, I'm not sure what the weather's going to be like later on, but a beautiful morning like this, you can go out and meditate under a tree or do some walking under in the gardens. Or if you really want to, you can always meditate in your rooms. There's many different forms of meditation, even what I call flat-out meditation. Which I think you understand what flat-out means. For those of you who are tired, who haven't had a good night's sleep, then you can always go to your rooms and just enjoy some nice, quiet meditation. Okay. So... Okay. So, for the meditation, we've got two or three days to learn how to allow our mind to become peaceful. And I'll use my words carefully, to allow your mind to become peaceful, not to make it peaceful. And always take your time. You have 3 days here. So if you get enlightened this afternoon, what on earth are you going to be able to do the next 2 days? So drag it out. In other words, when people rush or try to get something, they're not really paying any attention to this present moment. It means they just really mess up their mind and mess up their body. one of the meditation techniques, which I can teach right in the very beginning, teach at the end, is one of the most beautiful ways of understanding meditation. It was based on the Emperor's Three Questions story, which was one of those stories in one of my first books, and it was came from Leo Tolstoy, who wrote some short stories. It was trying to raise funds for the Jewish community, who were being persecuted in Imperial Russia at the time. But anyway, this story really took my attention because it did change many of the ways I looked at things. It was a king, an emperor, who had enough with ordinary religions and wanted to make his own. He had the power to do that. And instead of just believing in things, he wanted to find something which was practical, which he could use in all situations. And he distilled his requirements for religion, for spirituality, just out of three. When is the most important time? So when is the most important time?
Yeah.
Lunchtime, isn't it? Yes. No, when is the most important time? It's always now. And the next question was the important one. What is the most important thing to do? No, who's the most important person? And that was the one from which was a beautiful answer. Because, of course, I thought it was oneself, or God, or Buddha, or somebody. But no, the most important person was the one right in front of you. Which means that you always engage with whoever you're talking to, whoever's in front of you. So don't ever try to get rid of them to move on to something better or something less irritating. Be with this. And the most important thing to do was not to cure, but to care. Last night, I was giving up a lot of extension about what it means by caring and not curing. With the story of the doctor who was about to resign because his tragically lost one of his patients, 22-23-year-old young woman. Unfortunately, she passed away while he was the registrar, was his patient. And once she passed away, no one expected that. And he had to break the news to this young woman's husband, who'd only just been married a few years. And so he said that wasn't hard enough. To say, unexpected, this young man had lost his young wife, and also had to tell him that his two children did not have a mother anymore. And somehow he's had to cope with looking after two very young children and the grief losing the woman which he committed to for his life. And it wasn't. He knew that if he stayed as a doctor, that he would face these situations many times. And he felt a complete failure, letting down his whole family. And that's why he wanted to resign, because he couldn't stand it any longer. If he had to do that ever again, he just couldn't face it. It was just too painful for him. So, that was when I told him that the job of a doctor is not to cure. Job of anyone who is in the caring professions is not to cure people of their diseases, of their schizophrenia, OD, HD, ACDC. They weren't prospect. Anyway, job was not to cure people, but to care for people. And the curing comes as almost a byproduct. And I told him that if you think you're going to cure people, you're going to fail many times in your life. But if you understand your job is to care for people, then there's no reason for you ever to fail. And even if someone is having a very painful, untreatable illness, then that's what you can do for them and their family, care for them. And they should be able to care for them so much that even if they die, they know they were cared for all the way through. That's why you never need to feel a failure. Trying to cure people is sometimes impossible. And so, be a carer, as a doctor. And the byproduct was that I guaranteed it's true that if you are caring for people, the cure comes almost automatically most times, because that caring is more important than curing. And it adds this metta, this compassion, this loving kindness, as well as the wisdom to actually do heal things. And through my monastic life, especially monastic life as a teacher, I've seen many times caring for illnesses, caring for problems, we find solutions, and they're beautiful solutions which work. So anyway, what's that got to do with the meditation? What's the most important time in your meditation? So when is the best time to meditate?
Yeah.
Now, yes. When's the worst time to meditate? Later. that's a good answer, smart aleck answer, but it's true. When's the best time to meditate now? When's the worst time to meditate later? And what is meditation? It's in the present moment now. So what are you supposed to watch? What's your meditation object? You're supposed to watch the body, scan the body. You're supposed to watch the breath, watch the nimittas and stuff, these beautiful lights in the mind. What are you supposed to do when you're meditating? What are you supposed to watch? What's the most important thing for you to watch? Whatever's in front of your mind right now. That's the most important thing to watch. What's in front of your mind right now? What's the most important thing to do with it? Not to try and cure it, to get rid of your sleepiness, your tiredness, your anxiety, your pain, whatever it is, but to care for it. You have this beautiful compassion, which means that you never need to have a wandering mind. What do you mean my mind wanders off? It means you chose, you want to watch, say, something like the breath, and you're watching something else. You're not watching what's right in front of your mind. So, you're thinking, you're restless, you're planning. If that's what's happening right now, it's right in front of your mind, give it importance. And care for it. Do not try and cure it. Otherwise, you will fail many times. Sometimes, to emphasize the point, sometimes I go travelling, and even today on the bus, Venerable Chandra said, "Oh, I'm supposed to be there." Well, you can never be there, you're always here. And it's true. Sometimes I don't travel at all. When I go in an aircraft, I just sit on the seat. I never move. The aircraft doesn't move me. I just do the sitting. So what do you mean, travelling? And they said, when are you next coming back to the UK? What are you talking about? I'm always here. Sometimes you guys aren't here. So changing perceptions around make meditation so easy. Where are you? Right here. What's in front of your mind? Be aware of that. Give it importance. That's what awareness is. You give it importance. You don't try and push it away for something else which you think is going to be more rewarding or more pleasurable. Learn from this. Which means whatever you're doing in this meditation, you can always practice the three Emperor's Questions meditation technique. Even when you're sick and you're dying, when you're depressed, or have anxiety disorders. What are you experiencing right now? You have anxiety. That was actually where, from simple meditations like this, you get these amazing solutions. That was where this young lady, Chippy her name was, she was a student at Adelaide University studying veterinary. Yeah, I remember, same dentistry, yeah. and she was had very chronic, very deep anxiety disorder. She couldn't get out of bed. To get out of bed was just terrified her. And so when she tried all sorts of doctors, psychologists, medications, she's at university to get free medical care, and nothing worked. So what do you do when nothing works? Ring up the Sangha. Do I say that? The local Sangha? You? And so, because sometimes we got more little tricks up our, I was going to say sleeves, more tricks under our robes. And that's when I told her, to say, well, you know, when you're anxious, what does it feel like? So it's not trying to get rid of it, it's trying to understand it. In particular, so where is it located? It's a very little interesting technique. Where is it located in your body when you have an anxiety attack? In my chest somewhere. And that's what I said, not good enough. I want coordinates. I want measurements. Exactly where in your chest? Starting from your navel, centimeters and millimeters up, is it to the left or the right or the center? And anyway, once you feel that sensation, now, how big is it? Is it like a circular? Is it just a point or does it stretch out? And where does it stretch out to? I want details. All I was really saying, I want you to get to know your anxiety disorder. Especially the fact that it's manifested in your body somewhere where you can get to know it. And so she did that. She called 3 days later, gave a really good description of the location of the tension, the tightness. Tension, tightness, that's not clear enough. Exactly what type of tension, what type of tightness, what type of pain. So she had to give me a very detailed description. Took her 3 days to get it, of what the pain felt like, how it developed, whether it just was there from the beginning, whether it throbbed, whether it expanded, whether it got better than worse. So she had, when she had an anxiety attack, it was really important for her. What's happening now is not to really try and get rid of it, but to know it, to learn from it. And once she gave me a really detailed description of how, when she had an anxiety attack, where it was manifested in her body and how it felt for how long, then I said, now to add the last of the endless three questions, kindness, care. So care for that feeling. Take your hand and massage that area. Massage it with as much kindness and tenderness as you possibly can. And because she couldn't get out of bed or anything for herself, she had this amazing partner, living boyfriend, Lloyd. And I know the names because it's a nice ending for the story. And Lloyd said, if you haven't got the energy to massage your tummy, ask your boyfriend. I think you probably want to do that. So, there we go. And so, massage the tummy. And after 3 days, call me again. And then, of course, she told me what happened when you massaged the tummy, where the anxiety was. She said, it just vanished, disappeared. What happened to the anxiety, the emotion behind that? And that's when she paused and said the anxiety went as well. And that's how you dealt with anxiety disorder. To know how it manifests in the human body, where it manifests, how it feels, for how long. And then, once you're aware of it, give it kindness, care for it. And then it vanishes. She's out of bed within a couple of weeks. Back to college, got first class honours, and then of course, after that, she married Lloyd. I guess he did the water blessings, and all the blessings for them. I was their monk. They got, I think, 3 kids now. always been about to say hello. So it's a bit of a little story of how simple things like the Emperor's three questions, now's the most important time. The way you experience things is important. You've got to learn from it. Understand that's why it's come up. So learn from it and don't stigmatize it. Oh, it's only an anxiety disorder, I shouldn't have this. It's sleepiness. I shouldn't have sleepiness. Oh, it's, I don't know what else, I'm bored. I shouldn't be bored. Be aware of it. It's important. And be kind to what you're experiencing. And then you learn so much. We especially learn that caring is the way we cure things. The anxiety disorder disappears, the boredom vanishes, the wandering mind vanishes, the fear of what's going to happen next, all this planning which we have, which is just fear based. What if things go wrong? In my life, I plan very little, because I've learned from experience. When I don't plan for the future, things go wrong. When I do plan for the future, they go wrong anyway. Either way, they go wrong. So I decide, as much as possible, not to plan. And it's all going to go wrong. And that way I can enjoy myself and have some peace before it goes wrong. Instead of being so burnt out when it goes wrong. I don't know how to cope with it. So that is a way which is learned. It's a wonderful way from the Emperor's Three Questions meditation. And also it does mean that during this retreat, especially this morning, this is not a US Marine boot camp. We are not, I always see you all in lines and rows. You know, it's, no, I did my first retreat. You had all the women on one side, all the men on the other side, and all the gays and lesbians, transgenders didn't know where to sit. We don't need to have the this way, that way. And secondly, instead of just having bells, so which means that you have to meditate for half an hour and then walk for half an hour and then do this for half an hour. Sometimes those they call it discipline retreats. Not discipline, they're tension enhancing retreats. And all these stories, like one of the stories I told the other day Irving Guy House, the bells. Sometimes Ajahn Chah would have a bell. This is where I was trained in Thailand. And sometimes, I'm not sure if he just lost track of the time, but he wouldn't ring the bell for a couple of hours. And my knees were killing me, my back was killing me, I needed to go to the toilet, but you couldn't, because Ajahn Chah hadn't rung the bell yet. So I started fantasizing and planning, instead of meditating, how to get out of this. So what I decided to do was to get these little slingshots, you know, with a rubber band, and practice in the forest. There was this little until my aim was accurate. And then when I got really fed up, and I was sitting too long, and I saw the bell there, I could ding. Anyone know what was going on? By the time he figured what was going on, everyone would bow and leave. So I did have the nerve to do that, but I came pretty close a few times. So the point is, why should you need to want to do that? So during this retreat, you can come into this room anytime. You can leave anytime. Which means that when you're meditating, you stay sitting here because you're enjoying it, not because you have to. Which also means the meditation becomes something you look forward to, something which is pleasant. Sometimes even for me, that sometimes you don't want to meditate too much, you're either tired or in pain or you need times that, you know, short meditation is all you want. And other times, just half an hour, 45 minutes, wow, you know, you're just really enjoying yourself. You want to sit here for about 2 or 3 hours and happen to leave. Imagine if there was a bell under the Bodhi tree when the Buddha was getting enlightened. Gong! So you can understand. You got the giggles over there. So you can understand that people's meditation is different for everybody. So trying to fit everybody into a schedule is usually counterproductive. Even the first times which I tried this, you take off the schedules, take off the bells. People said, oh, people will just take advantage, they'll just sleep and they won't meditate very long, they won't get up in the early morning unless they have a girl, they won't meditate that much. But the opposite happened. First time I tried that, people were meditating to 10, 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. The reason was because they knew they didn't have to get up early in the morning when the bell went. If their meditation was going well, it was like hot, you know, it was really going nice and deep, they could carry on. They knew they could always catch up on their sleep in the early morning by just not getting up that early. They also knew they could take a nap during the day. Take away the fear which often comes through controlling and scheduling. They could just relax. And I found there's more people meditating, putting more hours meditating than when you had a schedule. That's why I've always tried to maintain as minimal schedules as possible. Which means that people can actually go with their own natural rhythms of meditation. And there will be times, not every time, you get deep meditation, but sometimes, some days, for one reason or another, you find out eventually. Sometimes your meditation is very peaceful, very deep, for goodness sake, carry on. Even if you miss lunch or breakfast, you can eat any time. And those, now you only have the food, it's a precept, it's only in the morning. So you only have food here, just breakfast and lunch. But just even on the way here, just from the bus, I saw this. There's a nice subway just around the corner. I'm not going to check on you. We put a CCTV camera in the subway store. Which means, no, we really get to the fact that you just eat. Especially if you miss lunch because you're in deep meditation. This is just learning how to work with your body. To be kind. And it also means you have a wonderful time. It's not just sitting meditation, it's also doing the walking meditation as well. And we'll explain in more detail later on exactly how we do the walking meditation. But the first day is just giving a general idea of how to be still. For those of you who have done meditation before, this is not about concentration, this is about stillness. Too many people feel they've got to concentrate on something in order to get somewhere. And if that was the case, this would be not a meditation camp, but a concentration camp. With all the terrible things which go on in such places. And I still rebel against the word concentration, because even my teachers at school would say, concentrate! And it was something I had to do, was forced to do, and I didn't enjoy doing. And you find you don't need to use that word. If you're enjoying it, you're engaged in the task. You don't need to force. It happens naturally. And the story which I often say, always say, just for those people who haven't seen it before. We have the glass of water, Simone. Now, I've asked you to do this before, and yes, we have another nun here today, and what is your name? Mom? That is true. two venerable Brahms here. You're an adjunct. Yeah. So we've got two adjunct Brahms. And when I looked at you, I thought, wow, you know, your face is ample and your girth is ample. You're not the same as me. You're an image. Maybe you've got a little bit to go, but. So, Ajahn Brahm. maybe before I do this, there's one story which. before I do this one. Oh, he gets some great stories by monks from different cultures. This monk is over in Bodhinyana Monastery. His name is Nibhuto. He was from the Punjab. His parents were Sikh. And he told me a really interesting experience, a real one which he had years ago, that in his village, all of the men are called Singh. S-I-N-G-H. It's just the name they give them. And all of the women have the surname Kaur. K-H-O-R, K-H-A-W, Kaur. And so when everyone has the same surname, of course, there's only a certain number of first names, so it'll always be like sometimes people with the same names. Like Ajahn Brahm, Nun, and Ajahn Brahm Monk. So, one of these old women died in the village. And once she died, it was in a village, but they had real doctors. They were educated. It wasn't like witch doctors. These were real high qualified doctors. They checked her out. Yes, she was dead. She passed away. So they arranged a funeral for that evening. Because in their tradition, they did a cremation very quickly. But fortunately, not too quickly. Because in the late afternoon, she woke up. So they thought they were dead, but they woke up. And when she woke up, she told a story. What happened in that space, the near-death experience, after she was confirmed dead until she was alive again. And what she said, what she experienced, but after she died in the morning, these two spirits grabbed her and dragged her to this boss spirit. And the boss spirit took one look at her, dragging her towards her, and scolded the spirits, the junior spirits, saying, "You've got the wrong Mrs. Kaur." Oh, really? So the same name, but the wrong one, because they have the same surname, and this one had two of the same first names. So she got dragged back again. And that's when she woke up in the village. About half an hour later, another Mrs. Kaur died. This time she never woke up again, so obviously they got the right Mrs. Kaur this time. That's the trouble when people have the same names. So, if one of us dies, just check out, make sure they got the right name. Anyway, oh yeah, okay. So, Ajahn Brahm. Ajahn Brahm asked you.
Oh, God.
This glass of water. My job is to keep this perfectly still. Has it stopped moving yet? Yes? Yes or no?
No.
Has it stopped moving yet?
No.
No, okay. Why? Because I'm not even looking at it. I'm not paying it any attention. I'm not being mindful. I'm now being mindful of this. Has it stopped moving yet?
No.
No. Because I'm not concentrating. I'll now concentrate and be mindful. Honestly, that sometimes when people meditate in front of me, that's what they look like. It's scary as a teacher dropping your eyes after meditation. So anyway, I'm concentrating now. Is it perfectly still yet?
No.
And this is how many people meditate. They're mindful, concentrated, trying to make their mind still. They never achieve it. It's impossible to do it. If there's anybody who knows just basic biology, just the muscles in the arm are always moving. It's the metabolism. It always has to have some shaking there somewhere. A car or anything perfectly still. So, how can you get this water to be perfectly still? Yes. Let go. Stop grasping. Detach. Relax. To the mat. And now, I turn around. What do you think of that water?
Getting still now.
Okay. Is it still yet?
Well, yes and no.
Just like her namesake, very tricky. You can't really get it more still than that. And that's effortless. So that is actually how we get our mind to be still, by letting go, putting things down. Now's the most important time. This is the most important, and I'll just care for it. Very simple meditation technique, but incredibly powerful. So that's when we let our mind become still little by little. It takes time. You just come from a busy schedule, I just come from busy schedules, and it takes a time for the mind to settle down. Give it that time. There was this one migrant who came to UK. He was a doctor in his home country, but his qualifications weren't recognised here in the UK. So he got a job at a building site. He worked really hard. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Then he went home, his wife said, how much did you earn today? Nothing. I didn't get any pay at all, said the migrant doctor, who was just laying bricks. He said, I think they may exploit people in this country, especially migrants. But he worked on Thursday, still didn't get paid. On Friday, he worked really hard. And then, in the afternoon, his boss came to him and gave him this big pay packet. He went home afterwards. He told his wife, I finally understood how things work in England. From now on, I'm only going to go to work on Fridays. Now sometimes people, when they meditate, they only want to go to meditate on payday. You know, when they get nice meditations. All those great meditations which you one day will get, you work for them. All those other days when you're meditating, not really getting anywhere, but just being still, just being in this moment, just being attentive to what's in front of you and being kind, little by little, you build up the momentum, you build up credit, you build up the bosses taking a look at how much meditation credits you've got, and even if you think you're getting nowhere, have some confidence in myself, your teacher, for this 3 days. The check is in the mail. That's how it works. So anyhow, so for the next hour and 10 minutes, just relax. You don't have to sit on the floor. After a while, you get sore. There's chairs around, nice comfortable chairs. And the wise meditators, they're the ones who've already got the chairs. So you can actually sit wherever. And sometimes what you can do, you can meditate on the floor, if you like, on the floor. And then on a chair. And then just change it around a bit. So that would mean that your body doesn't get too sore. Don't try and discipline your body. Force it. Otherwise you just get aches and pains. Be kind to your body, care for it. And that way you have beautiful meditations. So, I think that's enough for the time being for me. Are there any questions? Yeah.
change during the meditation, but the approach, we could maintain one approach or two approaches, and the one approach is like kindness, like more like metta meditation, to embrace the object, and the other one is anupada, which is not grasping, which I believe is more like grounded in your two characteristics. So it's a little bit confusing for me, because I don't know what exactly attitude of the mind should be towards the object. So
okay.
Because when you're saying like give it importance, I'm not sure if it's not contradicted with the non-grasping thing, that
yeah.
It's actually in awareness but not important. I just
okay.
discard it in a way. So if you could please explain it.
Could you all hear that?
Mm.
Okay, good. No, I won't repeat it. Sometimes we talk about establishing awareness on an object. Sometimes we talk about letting things go. And the point is that we have to know what to let go of, and then what's left is what remains, and that's what we allow to stay. So sometimes letting go and letting be, which is the one you should do. And what we let go of is like things like control, fear, doing, thinking. If we let go of all those things, it's not grasping them. What is left? And what is left, we let it be and give this wonderful loving kindness to it. So in that simile which I gave, even like the simile of the grass, putting it down, we let it go, and what's left is still water. And we don't attach to that, because if we attach to it, it gets moving again. We're kind to it. It is that kindness, the wonderful description which I developed over many years of opening the door of your heart for whatever it's experiencing now. That is a letting go of controlling and choosing, and then what comes in with that be with a smile, with kindness. You'll often notice if you're kind to something, it stays with you. It's the glue which allows the mind to stay with the object. And when we let go of things and things stay, then they become still. It's not that that's the end of the meditation. Because what happens when things become still? We go deeper. Outer things vanish, and inner things become more clear. Little by little, we go deeper into the meditation. We don't do this by grasping, not coming from a sense of self. It's not me holding on to these objects. It's totally let go. Let go of wanting and ill will, holding on. Why would I go with those things? What's left? And that's what we open the door of our heart to. What's left? We let go of craving. We don't grasp with our hands onto things. And then afterwards, what's left? It becomes very peaceful. And later on, I think you know this because you read all my books. You know that when you are very still, things vanish. They disappear. They can't be seen or touched. Can you hear the sound of the echo? After a while meditating, you won't be able to hear that anymore. Not because it's turned off, but because the nature of the brain and the mind is only to notice things which change. After a while it vanishes. When you first close your eyelids, you can see the inside of your eyelids. After a few seconds, you're not seeing anything at all. The sense of sight is turned off. Hearing, as long as things don't change, you don't hear anything. If you can stay as still as possible, comfortably, you won't feel your body. Little by little, the senses turn off. As they turn off, you get more and more still. You're letting go of doing stuff. You're not grasping. You're letting things disappear and vanish. You know, when the body vanishes, that's where you get into really amazing states of bliss. You didn't grasp those things. That's what happens when you stop grasping. And you open the door to the outside. Little by little, even that disappears. What you thought was bliss, and more bliss inside of that. So you don't hold on to the outside. It goes to the inside. Always in. And one thing disappears, something more beautiful is left. You know, there was these Russian dolls. You know, these babushkas. That's why, what is that? Anyway, yeah. Thank you. But somebody once gave me a set so I could actually demonstrate this point for meditation. The one on the outside, you open it, and inside there's one. It looks exactly the same, but a little smaller. Open that, and there's another one inside. Little smaller. Open that, there's another one inside. Little smaller. So inside your body, you open that up, as it were, and you go into this beautiful sense of the mind, the emotional world, inside. And you go inside of that into the this present moment. Inside is, because our mind is just so spread over our history, our future. And so we go inside of that, and we've got just a present moment. The past and the future vanish, we've just got now. Inside of now, we've got the silence, so we don't need to talk. Inside the silence, we could actually use the breath. Inside the breath, when that disappears, we've got our mind. Inside the mind, we've got these different states of joy and bliss. You get into like the beautiful nimittas, these lights. Inside of that, you've got the first jhana. Inside of that, second channel. Side of that, the third channel. Bliss upon bliss upon bliss. Stuff you never thought could exist. You don't do that by grasping. You never get close. Kindness, yes, because you allow whatever's right here now to be. You're not afraid of it. And it disappears. Real love and kindness. The greatest act of love is to let things go. If you have a partner or a relation who passes away, the greatest act of love is to let them go. Not to try and keep them because you don't know how to live without them. Let them go. So you let everything go. That's why that kind of love, the love is not attachment. Some types of love is, but that's not real love. Have you ever been to those amazing times? Maybe because I'm a monk, you get to privilege to be with people when they die. And one of the first times this occurred, there was this couple. Jenny, she was a nurse. Her husband, Steve, was a white water rafter. He had this amazing business where he'd get his clients to go to the most scenic parts of this world, get on a raft and take them down these rapids. He enjoyed it, made a lot of money out of this, and doing things which he really, really loved. But unfortunately, he got cancer, really young. And this was one strong, fit young man, and he was wasting away, and his last months would go to his little flat in Fremantle with his wife Jenny to try and counsel them. And then what was happening was he wasn't dying. He should have died a couple of days ago. He was still there. And then eventually looking in their house, being in their house, sometimes you get great insights. So I told Jenny, have you told Steve it's okay to die? Have you given him permission to die? Clearly, this is his wife, who'd been with him for such a long time. She understood it straight away. She didn't ask me or tell me anything, she just jumped on the bed and held her dying husband, who she obviously loved so much. Very gently, because he was skin and bones, as we see with cancers. He said, "Steve, I love you very much. It's okay to die. I give you permission." He died that night. There was the one thing which was stopping him from dying. He didn't want to hurt the woman he loved. It's called letting go. The greatest act of love is to let someone go. Steve would die anyway, because she was holding on because she hadn't let him go yet. That's what happens when you stop grasping. You have this wonderful kindness and joy to let people go. So now, I will let you go. And now I give you permission to not to die. It's one of those from walking meditation or sitting meditation. Or resting meditation or whatever. Would you have, what have we got here?
Meditation and guidance, yeah. So yeah, if anyone wants to meditate with me for another half an hour or whatever, you're most welcome to. If you want to just go and explore the grounds, have a cup of tea, just get yourself settled into this place, you're most welcome. One thing which you would ask you to do, to please let go of talking. Remember, if there is really any need to speak, so you see someone getting lost, you know, even the girls go, "I get lost in this place," so many corridors and stuff, and if, you know, they're trying to find a lunch place, they just you can do miming, it's very good.
They can ask.
But you're part of this retreat. Are you allowed to speak? Can you do the mimes?
The
first day anyway. The fighting place. Fine with the toilet, so. So anything else?
But not to
volunteer
all the time. Because sometimes we're restless and just want to
Excellent, yes.
Yeah. The only other thing so this building's very nice, and there's lots of little hidden places. One of which is a big kind of, what would you call it? Not a shrine room. What do you call it? A Christian
chapel.
Big one. It's one of downstairs. So have a look, because that's really nice.
Okay, off you go and just relax and max, enjoy yourself.
When we lend the mats to go outside with the light in our rooms, like this, and we get them to our rooms and come back here.
I think we can trust you. Okay, well, you know, make sure everything was out before you leave. Eventually. Excellent, yeah. That's okay by me. No problem. Yeah, sure.